The Innerbell Neighborhood Stories Project collects stories from residents who lived in the neighborhoods that were removed by the construction of the Innerbell Freeway in Akron. This project is part of the City of Akron's efforts to transform the decommissioned section of the Innerbell Freeway and to document a part of Akron's history that has been largely missing to date. I'm Roger Riddle, and this is the second episode of my conversation that we are calling A Primer on Grief, with Liz Ogbu of Studio O and Bishop Joey Johnson, Senior Pastor of the House of the Lord Church. I sat down and talked to a lot of different people as we've been working through this project. Not everyone who's going to listen to these stories shares the actual experience of living in this neighborhood. I was one of those people. I did not grow up here in Akron, but there's a version of this story that has happened in just about every major city in this country. And there are different points where you can relate to it. Even though I didn't live in the neighborhood, as I began to hear these stories, they began to open something up in me. As I began to work through how we're going to present these stories, I shed a lot of tears as I was hearing these stories, as Bishop Johnson said, holding these stories as sacred, because all of a sudden I was hearing someone else's trauma. I was hearing them tell the important pieces. There are fantastic stories within these segments about how wonderful the neighborhood was, and stories about friendship and stories about family, as well as stories of loss, like where they were separated from those friends, where they were separated from those neighbors that were the support structure. What are some of the things that people can do as they are listening to this in these moments to address the trauma and grief and the emotional experience of hearing someone else's story?
A great one, I think, is very simple, but very powerful, and that is diaphragmatic breathing. Learning to breathe deeply. And we, at one point, we didn't know why that worked. We now know that the vagus nerve connects from the diaphragm all the way to the base of the skull, all the way into the into your cerebral cortex and face, eyes, larynx, pharynx. We now know that why that works. We didn't know at first. We just do deep breathing and stuff. But now we know we are neurophysiologically outfitted for that to take place and for deep breathing to calm some of the things that we're feeling and we're experiencing. If you've been listening to me and I started to talk about the autonomic nervous system, I'm going to give you a short lesson for free in what's called polyvagal theory. Poly, many, vagal, the vagus nerve, which runs beneath your diaphragm, above your diaphragm, to the base of your brain. There are three circuits that come online that people who are evolutionists believe are very prominent in the way we face stress, in the way we deal with danger and safety. The first one's called the flock system, or the social engagement system, is where you're at home, is where you have rest and restoration, is where you eat. Some people call it rest and digest. It's where you eat, it's where you enjoy yourself, it's where you're safe. If you are threatened, a system comes online that's called fight or flight. It's danger. The easiest way to think about this is flock is green and they interact with people. Danger is yellow. You are now on alert. Your body is preparing. You're gearing up to fight or flight. Heartbeat more rapid. Lungs are drawing more oxygen. Chemicals are being flushed or put in your body, your system. You're getting ready to mobilize, to get up and run. If there is a life threat, it's red. And red is stop, and it is freeze. So you have flock is your engagement system, green. You have fight and flight, which is your safety system. You're feeling in danger, yellow. And you have freeze, which is red. I'm attempting to deal with a life threat. And my body's preparing me as if I'm not going to make it. Those three systems operate at all time as we operate and try to deal with safety and threat. I think another one, I want to jump way up to the top. I was thinking today at as we deal with this whole Western perspective, Western philosophy and Western culture has us not wanting to deal with emotion. African American culture, emotion is one of our strengths. So I think one of the things that we have to do is stop being ashamed of our strength. Our strength is emotion. Our strength is using emotions in ways that can forward who we are and our identity and those kind of things. But we're kind of running from that because the Western world is don't never let them see you sweat, and don't go down there and just think good thoughts. And then, no, we've got some emotional pain that we have been able to cross over and come out of that has made us who we are.
I could not agree more. I also think that, part of feeling your emotion is actually being in your body, right? Like when we are having emotional experiences, usually there is some sort of physical response to that. And I think because we don't acknowledge or value our emotion, we often try to shut down the physical response. So like Roger, you mentioned, in some of the interviews or just going through this process, that it brought tears, right? And I've listened to a couple of the stories and I've had tears. And I think normally we're like, oh no, I shouldn't cry, I shouldn't be emotional. And I would actually encourage, if listening to this brings tears to you, please just cry. Like that is actually part of how your body releases. And it's really important to let it complete the process. Because again, if you stop it, that's akin to holding the grief and holding the trauma within you. I also find sometimes there are tips and tricks of things that I go to when I want to be comfortable or relax. And so I would encourage, do that for when you're listening to the stories, or if the stories feel triggering, go to your things that relax you. And then also just getting outside, getting some fresh air. If you heard something rough, go and take a walk and just let the physical movement of your body support the releasing of some of the energy that has built up. I think the important thing is not to dismiss any way that the stories make you emotional or might even make you uncomfortable. Because I think within that discomfort is actually some wisdom. And it's really important that we don't walk away from it. Because I actually would argue that some of the issues that we face within our communities, within our cities, are directly resulting from the fact that we often will not allow ourselves to face our discomfort and to face our pain. And so by you figuring out ways to hold these stories, to listen to it and not shy away from the feelings that they're eliciting, it's actually a first step to a larger process of what does it mean to turn and face some of the things that are most painful to us, most uncomfortable to us in our society today.
That is so good. Let me jump on there. That's so good. We have a saying in grief recovery, sad ain't bad. But sad to many people in America is bad. And to be somehow pressed down or pushed back or to stay away from it. And tears can be cathartic and tears can be healing, but we've learned not to cry. There is a different chemical component to grief tears and other kinds of tears. They don't have the same chemical makeup, which is, I think, God trying to tell us, there is something very powerful and healing about crying about certain things. And sometimes you need to sit down and just have a good cry. Now, I know I'm in deep water now. just let it out, because the more you push it down, the more you stuff it, the more it tends to come out some other kind of way.
Bishop Johnson, you said sad is not bad. What I would like to do is touch on how the range of emotions that may come up. There is nothing wrong with feeling the emotion. It's how you act on the emotion that could turn things bad. If you get angry as you're listening to this, that's understandable. That's fine. Feel that anger and figure out how to turn it into something positive. But what you don't want to do is let that turn into rage and you're taking it out on someone that they aren't the object of what your anger is.
I think what happens is, and we need to help people understand the autonomic nature of the nervous system, that we have people in church, the church has done this to people. They feel guilty because we're telling them, don't be angry, don't be sad, don't fear. Well, those are not choices that people can make. Those are choices that their neurological, physical systems are making for them. Now, after that's taken place, that's the intervening variable that biases my response. My response, my physical response, after I've had time to think about it, after it's gone to my cerebral cortex, now I can make a response. And I want to make sure that my response is adequate and right for the situation. So here's the question we ask, Brother Roger. Is my response adequate, appropriate for this situation at this time or with these people? Because it may not be appropriate for me to respond in the way that I'm thinking about responding, because I'm feeling all this stuff. Now I need to make some response to it. So let me give it real quick. I'm walking down the street. I see a bear. My autonomic nervous system says run. I run, but then I recognize it's not a bear. It's a shadow. So my response is inappropriate to the stimulus. So what I need to do now is, if I recognize that, I can calm myself and stop running. Well, what we have is stories, situations, bills that come online and we don't know how to shut down, that end up causing us to then make responses that are inappropriate to the situations that we're facing.
I believe you're touching on reaction as opposed to responding. I think that's a lot of what I was touching on, was that, you know, you may feel an emotion and you react to that emotion right there in the moment without taking some of the advice that we've shared earlier, of taking a deep breath, really feeling how it is, and you react to it. And you could react in a way that you could regret later on, as opposed to taking a moment, breathing deeply and thinking it through and being able to use how you feel to respond in some sort of way. Bishop Johnson, you mentioned guilt, and guilt is an emotion that some people may feel. We did not hear these stories told about Akron. And once it starts to come up, you may listen to it and be like, oh my God, I can't believe I've never heard this before. And there may be a sense of guilt that's attached to that. But, you know, if you can slow down, take a deep breath, and really listen and feel what's being shared in that moment, you can turn around and respond in a way that not only helps you, but helps the community, helps the city to grow and be a better place. And so I hope that that is something that comes from some people listening to these stories.
I totally agree with what you both have been saying. I think, you know, to the point of reaction versus response, I have been thinking a lot, especially during the pandemic and what are we calling it, the racial uprising of the last couple of years, how much urgency, as it is practiced oftentimes, hurts all of us. That oftentimes when we are in a state of urgency, we're rarely doing urgency for the sake of repair. We're often doing urgency for the sake of getting past discomfort. And so I think that's the land where the reaction versus response lives, right? That we're uncomfortable, whether we're uncomfortable with our grief or we're uncomfortable seeing other people's griefs. And so we move quickly to do something to try and erase that. But that rarely allows us to stay in it long enough to get to the point, or take the pause to get to the point where we can actually think about the response that would heal the wound. It really just catapults us into a way that forestalls healing for some time. And we wind up in conditions of complacency. So from the standpoint of what does it mean to hold space for this, I think it's, we have to be willing to be uncomfortable for a little bit, whether it's uncomfortable with our grief, uncomfortable with our guilt, which I would actually argue is also a form of grief. We have to be willing to sit with that for a little bit and really understand what it means and why are we feeling this, and allow ourselves to get to a point where we might actually be able to see what that response, not the reaction, might be. And to also accept that it took generations to get us to even this point where we're asking these questions, where we're willing to hold these conversations in a larger and meaningful way. it will probably also take generations before we get to a point where we actually feel healed. So this is not to sort of say there's a quick band-aid that we can apply and we're going to be okay. And that's a hard thing to hold, right? Like, I would like to see the pain erased right now. But I think if we're willing to stay in the pocket, and that doesn't mean staying in the pocket of continual pain. Like, I think there is improvement that can start to happen. I think we just have to accept that the process to get to healing is also going to be a long one, because the process that got us to these wounds was a long one to begin with. And we have to be willing to take what we can and do the long, hard work of moving towards that state that it exists outside of the pain, outside of the grief.
One of the things that came out, and I think this is excellent, you both are really hitting some points. And one thing that came up right there, you know, our reaction sometimes is because we don't understand that the white folks who are attempting to help us solve this problem are often responding in fight or flight. They feel like they're in danger, and they start to respond that way. And if we're in the same state, if we're reacting, we're going to have reaction against reaction. And I think that's what we often have. And then we don't move very far. And somebody said, well, what happened? What happened is our autonomic nervous system, we never got to the point where we were able to flock, come together, really think it through, because we became traumatized and the trauma came out. So I think this is going to help people as they begin to understand, before I respond, before I react, because one of my heroes in the Christian faith says, whenever you react, you are in danger of setting up an extreme.
The Innerbelt Neighborhood Stories are produced by me, Roger Rowe. Our executive producers are Liz Ogbu of Studio O and the City of Akron. Our music is by Flaco Torres, with additional sounds by Become Stardust. Special thanks to Summer Hall, Fred Wheat, Dylan Garitano, Mike Meyer, the Ohio and Erie Canalway Coalition, and a very special thank you to the Reconnecting Our Community Advisory Committee.